Lebanon's Hezbollah leader says resistance will continue until the demise of the Israeli regime, which he says is close. Iraq's holy city of Karbala hosts pilgrims mourning the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein III, Shia Imam. Also coming up, train disruptions in the UK as workers of the railway network go on a strike to demand better pay. Welcome. Our top story this hour, the Secretary General of the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says the Israeli regime is an evil entity which should be wiped off the region.
And the Zionist entity is the clear wrong and the clear evil in this time. It is one of the most evil in our region. It is also absolute evil. It is pure corruption. It is a cancerous tumor in our region.
Speaking in a televised address, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah added the region has never seen peace due to the existence of the Israeli regime. He further warned Tel Aviv about the consequences of desecrating holy sites, including Al-Aqsa Mosque. Nasrallah noted the resistance front will press ahead with its campaign against Israel, and that the demise of the regime is close at hand. He said Hezbollah will continue to stand by the Palestinian people in their fight against the Israeli regime. Elsewhere in his remarks, he condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran in Denmark and Sweden and denounced any sacrilegious act. Nasrallah also underlined that Lebanon will continue to defend its integrity and sovereignty against any acts of aggression. Millions of people from across the world have flocked to the Iraqi city of Karbala to commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. Mourners have gathered at the shrine of the third Shia Imam to pay tribute to him on the 10th day of the lunar month of Muharram. The day known as Ashura is when Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred in an unequal battle with the army of the tyrant of their time, Yazid. The battle took place on the plains of Karbala in 680 AD. It serves as an eternal reminder of the fight against oppression and injustice. The Day of Ashura has been marked every year since some 14 centuries ago. Some countries, including Iran, commemorated the day on Friday this year.
People from all walks of life, young and old, clad in black, out on the streets taking part in mourning processions. During the first 10 days of the Islamic month of Muharram, culminating in Tasua and Ashura, eulogists recite the events of the Battle of Karbala, and Islamic scholars elaborate on the underlying message of Imam Hussein's stance against tyranny.
Tasua is the ninth day of the lunar month of Muharram. It is considered a very important religious occasion as Muslims worldwide commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Ashura, which literally means the 10th of Muharram, is the day Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his 72 companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in southern Iraq in 680 AD, as they fought courageously for justice against the much larger army of the Umayyad Caliph, Yazid I. Yeah. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is a hero that transcends time. His goodness makes him a moral example for all human beings worldwide, and foreign students at Tehran University have not missed the chance to mourn for the much revered Imam along with the entire Iranian nation.
We all gather here, irrespective of religion. We here in our Hayat, a lot of students who belongs to the different sects like Ahl Sunnah and other sects as well, they work for the love of Imam Hussein.
The very popular phrase, Hubbul Hussein Yajma'ana, this is the actual meaning of it, that everyone from around the world, no matter of their background, can come together and commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein for one message. The message of Islam, the message of the grandfather Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Participating in Hayat means like propagating the message of Imam Hussein, which is justice and unity.
Tearful mourners take part in rituals while educating the younger generation about the sufferings of Imam Hussein. The processions continue until noon. After the prayers, people line up for lunch. Many people consider it an honor to serve the lovers of Imam Hussein, and that is why they give away food not just to the needy, but also to those that have been taking part in the processions.
Cooking for a large crowd is very difficult, but we enjoy serving the lovers of Imam Hussein. It's an honor. Today we served about 3,500 meals.
The positive vibes that we get on this day is simply incomparable to any other experience.
The mourning rituals of Tasua and Ashura are considered an important part of Iranian culture, mostly because of the opportunity to reflect on Imam Hussein's values, his way of life, and what he stood up for. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Ashura is the 10th day of the Islamic lunar calendar month of Muharram, which marks the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam. Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad and the symbol of the fight against oppression, was martyred by the forces of the tyrannical ruler of the time, Yazid ibn Muawiyah, in an unequal battle in the plains of Karbala in modern-day Iraq some 1400 years ago, after he refused to pledge allegiance to the tyrant. Dressed in black as an expression of their grief, thousands of mourners marched through the streets of London as part of the mourning processions to mark Ashura. Participants in the mourning rite told Press TV why Imam Hussein's uprising against the corrupt Umayyad Caliph was so important in protecting Islam. They also denounced the recent acts of desecration to the Muslim holy book of the Quran in Europe.
Today, when we see the burning of the Quran, for example, in parts of civilized Western Europe, this must be condemned. This is not freedom of speech. And we are all here, despite 1,400 years since Karbala, we still remember on the day of Ashura and the day of Arbaeen. We come out in Marble Arch, in London, in Manchester, and everywhere throughout Europe and the world, we come out to commemorate this most important sacrifice, this beacon of light for humanity.
Imam Hussein is a symbol of peace and justice. So keeping that symbol of peace and justice across the years, yeah, it can show to the whole world that we stand for peace and justice. We stand for the message of Imam Hussein and his grandfather, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
What the man done in Sweden, it was a very provocative act, and an act which isn't propagated by neither Christianity or Judaism. Right, so this was firstly on an individual level to provoke, and it wasn't appropriate at all, and we should look beyond this and keep the unity between all faiths and all sects, because what happened was, of course, provocation to Muslims.
These scenes of impassioned commemorations prove that despite the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein hundreds of years ago, his name continues to ring out across the world and his sacrifices continue to inspire millions of Muslims around the world. They also prove that the legacy of Imam al-Hussein and the message of the Battle of Karbala, which is speaking up against injustice, will never be forgotten. Isa Ali in London.
Moving on now to other news. Train passengers in Britain are facing another day of disruption as the country's rail network is hit by fresh industrial action over pay and working. 14 Rail companies have walked out of their jobs. Train managers, station staff and guards are among the strikers. The operators are based in England, but the stoppage will affect cross-border trains to and from Scotland and Wales. Passengers have been warned to check train timetables before travel, as large areas of the rail network are expected to have little or no service. The 24-hour strike could disrupt family holiday travel amid the six-week school break. This is the third walkout in 9 days that has hit Britain's rail network. The UK has seen similar strikes across other sectors in recent months. Russia and African countries have agreed to cooperate to seek compensation for the damage caused by the Western colonial rule and to promote a multipolar world order. They announced the decision after the Russia-Africa summit in St. Petersburg, where the Russian president and 17 African heads of state were present. In a statement, the participants called for restitution of Africa's plundered cultural artifacts. They also denounced aggressive nationalism, neo-Nazism and neo-fascism, as well as Afro and Russophobia. The top officials further vowed to counter illegitimate sanctions. African countries have been distancing themselves from the West and moving closer to Moscow for help amid coups and other instabilities.
Multipolar world and invasive security were the main headlines of the talks that Russian President Vladimir Putin held with African leaders. Other issues were also discussed in the summit, including the food security. Withdrawal from the grain deal with Ukraine will allow Russia to accelerate the research of relations with African states. The food issue is exactly what the authorities can cling on to restore the ties lost after the collapse of the USSR. Representatives of African countries see Russia as a reliable partner, and thanks to this, Moscow has a good chance to firmly gain a foothold on the continent again. Putin has repeatedly stressed that Russia is ready to work together, hand in hand with African friends, to work for the future, to build a truly strategic interaction and partnership.
In the coming months, in the next 3 to 4 months, we will be ready to provide Burkina Faso, Zimbabwe, Mali, Somalia, the Central African Republic, Eritrea, with 50,000 tons of grain and fertilizer free of charge, and we will also provide free delivery of these products to consumers.
Moscow has once again written off $23 billion as part of African debt relief, implementing energy projects in 30 African countries, and is ready to settle accounts with African countries in national currencies. The descendants of prominent African leaders announced the creation of the Pan-African Anti-Colonial Legacy Forum. Among them are the descendants of Nelson Mandela, Gamal Abdel Nasser, Ahmed Ben Bella, Julius Nyerere, Samora Machel. New branches of Russian universities will be opened in Africa together with the enrollment increase of African students in Russian universities.
Russia has delayed its return to Africa. We should have done this earlier, especially since Moscow has such a good heritage in Africa. In Soviet times, Moscow has always supported liberation movements in Africa, supported humanitarian and economically. The USSR built a lot in Africa, developed a huge number of projects. After the USSR collapse, Russia was deceived in its choice of a pro-Western vector. The result is the expansion of NATO countries by the border. Moscow is once again resuming its relations with Africa countries when the grain deal is completed and African countries again need Russia's help.
The Russia-Africa summit was attended by representatives of those countries that are fed up with the Western approach and presented the majority of the African continent.
With Russia's strong return to Africa, the continent's leaders saw an opportunity to completely get rid of Western colonialism. They can also now tap into their natural resources and benefit from Russian experience in various fields such as security, agriculture and energy to fuel the growth of their countries. Marina Kartanova, Moscow.
North Korea vows to push relations with Beijing to new highs as a top Chinese delegation visits Pyongyang. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made the remark during a meeting with a delegation headed by a member of China's powerful Communist Party Politburo. The delegation is visiting Pyongyang for the 70th anniversary of the end of the Korean War. The meeting comes a day after Chinese and Russian officials stood shoulder to shoulder with Kim at a parade in Pyongyang amid tensions with Washington. During the parade, North Korea displayed its latest nuclear-capable missiles and attack drones. Both North Korea and China view the U.S. military shift to the Asia-Pacific as a threat. Digby Wren is an international relations expert joining us from the Cambodian capital, Phnom Penh. Digby, welcome. What's your take on the China-North Korea ties?
Well, nice to be back with you again and to say hello to your audience. Well, what can I say? It's a very important date. This is the 70th anniversary of the signing of the armistice on the Korean Peninsula after the U.S. invasion in 1950. That was a very bloody war, and the U.S. had partitioned. Russia had left the north, and the U.S. remained in the south and partitioned the country. And so there, the efforts by Korea to reunify have been thwarted at every opportunity by the United States, of course. And look, so what, in the present atmosphere and with tensions rising in obviously in the Ukraine, but also the U.S. Completely militarizing the Indo-Pacific, especially the first island chain, and now to the point where they're allowing Japan to remilitarize. And I think it's come to a head in the sense that China and Russia, but effectively China and North Korea, realize that they're going to have to cooperate, and North Korea needs to have, a big brother, a supporter who is able to, China is so advanced in technology and goods and, largest trading nation in the world. And so North Korea can benefit enormously from this. And one has to remember that, China has followed the UN sanctions against North Korea as well. And so they're not going to break those. But what they are going to do is they are definitely going to consider, building a stronger North Korea, making its economy more stable. And I think that's going to be welcomed everywhere in Northeast Asia, except, of course, by the Japanese and the Koreans, the Southern Koreans.
Digby, thank you very much indeed, as always, for your thoughts. Digby Wren is an international relations expert joining us live from Phnom Penh. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
آن را Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the Muharram. Imam Khomeini has said that keep alive the month of Muharram, for all we have is from it. Now, what about a month? When we talk about a month, it does not make any sense that someone says that, for example, whatever we have is because of January, or whatever we have is because of February, or we take the name of any month. But there is a specification, there is something extraordinary in the Islamic months. For example, the month of Ramadan, the people who wants the piety, the people who wants to become God-fearing, the people who wants God, the perfection, who wants the nearness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who wants to purify themselves, the month of Ramadan is the best month. Similarly, the thing that makes alive nations, that is the month that gives us the lesson to how to fight against the arrogant powers, to fight against the oppression, to fight against the terrorism, to fight against all injustice, and to fight against the sinful actions. That is the month of Muharram. That is because Imam Hussein alayhi salam, in the month of Muharram, he got martyred.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala.
So this month of Muharram, when we mourn, every day we have the speeches by the scholars, every day we mourn, every day we talk about the Battle of Karbala, every day we talk about the goal of Imam Hussein. And this is the month of Muharram because every day we have lessons, we have lectures. These lectures teaches us that how we can make alive the true Islam, the true nature and the fitrah of the mankind. And that's why he says that keep alive the month of Muharram means that every year when the Muharram comes, you need to keep it alive. You need to attend the sessions in the month of Muharram. You need to mourn every day in the Muharram, every year. You need to talk about the Battle of Karbala. When you talk about it, for all we have is from it. What do Imam Khomeini had? This revolution that he had, it was all from Muharram. He learned from the Muharram and Karbala how to stand against the Taghut. It was Muharram and Imam Hussein who taught him that if you want to get the success, if you want to have the true Islam, you need to give your blood. You need to struggle against the oppressors, the arrogant power, the devilish powers. And this was gained by Muharram. That's why when he learned it from Muharram, he applied it on his nation. And this was Muharram which made them alive.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day,
لا إله إلا الله.
Aperture.
During the Vietnam War, the U.S. military engaged in an aggressive program of chemical warfare codenamed Operation Ranch Hand. Now, from 1961 to 1971, the U.S. military sprayed a range of herbicides across more than 4.5 million acres of Vietnam to destroy the forest cover and food crops used by North Vietnamese. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. Agent Orange, which contains the deadly chemical dioxin, was the most commonly used herbicide. It was later proven to cause serious health issues, including cancer, birth defects, rashes, and severe psychological and neurological problems. But the Vietnamese were not the only ones affected. U.S. soldiers unknowingly brought the legacy of Agent Orange back home. Join us for this week's Aperture as we meet three children of U.S. veterans who fall victim to Agent Orange and follow them as they travel to Vietnam to face their demons. Here's the first part.
All I ever heard was war stories about how horrible it was and how violent everything was and that there was just death and destruction. And that's the picture that was painted in my head of what Vietnam was. And it scared me half to death when I was getting ready to come over here, to the point where I was actually shaking on the plane on my way here because I did not know what to expect.
Traveling here, someone said, you know, Heather travels back to the land of her father's demons. Vietnam is still a very scary, dangerous place to them.
I was actually very nervous and very scared. Several of my father's friends kind of scared me about some of the things that I may see and hear and experience. Their vision of Vietnam was a war-torn, angry place.
Do you guys have any bottled water before we get going, just in case?
My name is Josh Kelly. I was born on August 18th, 1975.
My name is Heather Bowser. My maiden name is Morris.
My name is Rachel Harding. I was born in northern Indiana near Chicago.
My dad was Daniel Kelly. He was in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he fought in Vietnam.
My parents had married 9 days before he had left for Vietnam. They said that, you know, if they had 9 days being together, that's what they wanted to do.
My father got his draft papers when he turned 18 and chose to marry my mother before he left. They got married, and 2 weeks later, he was deployed to Vietnam.
I've been trying to find out what exactly happened when he was there, because when I was younger, I tried to block the stories out because some of them were so scary and so violent and all that, that I just tried to not even listen to them because I didn't want to hear it because they scared the bottom of me because I was just a kid.
When they came home, they wanted to put the war behind them. The Vietnam War was a very difficult political time, civil rights time, and so wanting to put it behind them, start their family and move on.
As soon as he came home, they chose to wait to have children. They waited about 7 years before they decided to try, and I was the firstborn.
So my mother had two miscarriages. She lost two children, and no one in our family had had any kind of problems in that respect, so it was very unexpected. And then in 1972, my mother was pregnant again and felt that she had gone into labor early. She was not due for a while. They went to the hospital. She had already lost two children, so she was very scared. She thought she might be miscarrying again at the very late time in the pregnancy. They rushed her into the hospital, and she said, I'm in labor. And she was very thin, and they kind of said, no, you're okay. It's okay. You're going to be all right. You're not in labor. You barely look pregnant. She was 7 months along at that point. My mother woke up to my father sitting at her bedside telling her, and it's hard to talk about, but he said, Sharon, she's damaged. And that's what she woke up to. So I can only imagine how scary that was.
The doctors, as soon as I was born, they took me from my mom and they put me in a little incubator, and then they rushed me off out of the room. They didn't explain anything to my mom. They just said that there was problems.
Various doctors approached my mother at different times and asked what she had done to her child. What had she done to cause such terrible problems?
They brought her over to show me to her for about 5 minutes, and then they put me on an airplane and they flew me to another state, and they kept me in the incubator. And they put me in intensive care, and they had all kinds of doctors looking at me and checking to see if I was going to live or die, or what the deal was, because missing my arms and my leg, they weren't sure what all was wrong with me. They started to take me to the doctors and stuff out there, and because they were big hospitals and there was lots of doctors from around the world and everything, they wanted to try a whole bunch of different surgeries and stuff that were like experimental surgeries that nobody had ever tried before. Like, one of them was that they wanted to grow my arms back, and the way that they were going to do it is they were going to cut the skin open, break the bone, and then they were going to drill holes through it and put screws in it and put plates to separate the bone, and the bone would grow in between the gaps. And they said that it could take up to 5 to 10 years for my arms to finish growing back, and that it would be an extremely painful.
I want to go back to real quick to one memory I had in kindergarten. We were learning about our hands. This is your left hand, this is your right hand. And it's always a memory that I kind of laugh about. I love school. I couldn't wait to go to school. I was so excited. I wanted to read and do that stuff. So we're sitting in this circle, and the little children are sitting there, and I can just remember this to this day. And there was like a board on the floor, and it had a picture, an outline of a hand and another hand. And each child was to go around and take their turn and say, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, this is my left hand, this is my right hand. And so I remember just being anxious and excited to do my turn. And I went to put my hand in, and I just, at that moment, I was like, oh, okay. Because they had the outline, and my fingers didn't match the outline. And I was like, okay, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, but they don't look like that left hand and that right hand. And that was kind of like, okay, I'm different, that's different.
Pretty much all my life, as far back as I can remember, I knew I was different, because I was always going to the doctors, and I would always see the other kids playing and stuff, and I couldn't really go play with them because I either had doctor's appointments or they didn't want anything to do with me.
I have lost 19 children. I never carried more longer than 8.5 weeks, and I would lose my children. I have hypothyroidism, the infertility issue, and psoriatic arthritis. Those are the three biggest ones that I have that affect my life personally. And my family could not understand, my father included, could not understand, where did this come from? Nobody else in the family's ever had this. How come you're suffering from this and nobody else ever has?
I've seen lots of different kids that had disabilities and stuff from being like in the
in the hospitals and stuff all the time, and some of them are so similar that it would have to be from the same thing. The similarities in our disabilities are so much alike. There's no way to deny that it was the same thing that caused both of them.
These are the structural formulas for 2,4-dichlorophenoxyacetic acid, commonly known as 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. From these chemicals are made a large number of closely related compounds, which are sold commercially for weed and brush control. The Secretary of Defense initiated a project to determine whether visibility in troublesome jungle vegetation in the Republic of Vietnam could be improved by aerially applied chemical sprays. In that country, jungle growth, swamp foliage, and roadside vegetation retains its leaves the year around. Consequently, it affords ideal concealment to guerrilla terrorists who sporadically attack the free people of Vietnam. As a result of these tests, defoliation spraying was placed on an operational basis. Those chemicals already proven most effective as defoliants will continue to be used until faster acting types.
So my father says that he said that there was spraying of his base pretty regularly. I found out since that his base was practically sprayed every day. And that is also due to its proximity to Benoit. Benoit was the epicenter of where Ranch Hand worked out of. So if they had anything left on their missions, they came around that area and used it. The perimeter was hand sprayed, aerial spraying with the C-123 planes.
My dad was in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was stationed in the Chulai Air Base, and while he was there, he was exposed to lots of Agent Orange. They sprayed it on everything. It was in the food, it was in the water, it was on their clothes, it was on the plants, it was on the guns, the ammo, everything had Agent Orange on it. So he was heavily exposed to Agent Orange.
North Vietnam charged today that defoliants have produced many instances of miscarriages, congenital defects, and monstrosities among children.
As we anticipated, the Vietnamese doctors that we've met with very much share our concerns about the effects of Agent Orange.
Although that war was long ago, there is lingering anger about the United States' use of a controversial defoliant spread by American aircraft on the jungles there.
Milton Ross, a special forces advisor near Pleiku, has a son born without the tips of his fingers.
Frank Moore is nearly dead from cancer. He thinks the cancer was caused by chemical defoliants he was exposed to as a soldier in Vietnam.
My dad explained to me about how dangerous the stuff was because it would kill off big old trees and everything in just a couple of days. He would tell me the stories about how he would have to mix it and he would have to load it into the tanks, and he would put the tanks on the planes and the helicopters and everything while he was in the war.
It's still causing trouble, and all of the people that have lost their lives to Agent Orange, and this is kind of where it began. So it's very sad.
We found out that the rate of miscarriages, fetal death in utero, and birth defects are 4 times higher than the exposed, among the exposed, than the non-exposed. We have carried out some more studies. I am now very sure, certain, that toxic chemicals cause many things to my people, to the exposed people. Cannot deny.
Yes. Yeah.
Cannot deny the relationship between dioxin with the abnormal outcome of pregnancy. Yeah. Among the exposed people.
After the war time, I mean, after 75, his dad came back here and they have the first child. But due to the Agent Orange, she or he died after 10 days. The biggest biggest child of the family is a normal child because he was born before the time that the dad came to the army.
But do you know in America who carries the pain of Agent Orange? The veterans who serve. The veterans feel responsible.
Yes.
Our fathers felt responsible for us. Even for in Vietnam, I mean, they felt responsible. The soldier, not the chemical companies or the government that made the decisions.
So my father felt extreme guilt. He felt like he had caused my birth defects. He had told my mother that every time he looked at me, he felt that it was his responsibility. He had caused this to me. And that's a major problem in the United States, trying to work through the Agent Orange issue, is that the veterans feel extreme guilt.
The man that my mom knew from the time she was four did not come home from Vietnam. He's still wandering around in the jungle somewhere. He came home a very angry man, very sad man.
My dad was suffering more and more from his PTSD. He was having other health issues, and he was getting weak, and he couldn't do the things that he could do before, and his health was just going downhill.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is
For a Better Life.
For a Better Life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum everyone. You are listening to IRIB English Radio for a Better Life. This is Asma. I study English literature, and here again I have the pleasure to share some priceless moments with you guys. So without further ado, let's take a new step into the road of For a Better Life. Why me? Why am I the one who's got into this much of terribles? This is a common question that I guess it happens for every single one of us. Now that you are listening to this program, I'm pretty much sure that an occasion like this would cross your mind where you sit and you start complaining, you start nagging, and then you would point the finger to every single person in this world and say, why am I this miserable scapegoat? Why am I the person who ends up as a victim? Why am I this oppressed? Why am I facing all these problems? Yeah, we're talking about the faith that gets into conflict. Sometimes in our life, we face some situations in which we do not get the meaning and the purpose of all these difficulties and of all these pressures that have been put on our shoulders. Sometimes I personally think that, okay, God is there. I'm pretty much sure that He's helping me to pull through. But come on, the pressure is so much. And I sometimes feel like it's very difficult to cope up with the difficulties when they come together as in the wagons of a train, you know, because misery has got company. It does not come all alone. When you face a difficult situation, a miserable situation, it's not going to be only in one aspect. Everything come together. Like, you know, it starts from the morning. Some days when you wake up, you see that there is no electricity, there is no water, you want to drink a tea. You cannot just have that tea the way you have it every day. Just like these things that happen in one day, as a very trivial example, you can apply this example into life. When everything just gets mixed up and they come together in a very haphazard way, you do not know which one to handle, which problem to face first, what to do with this problem, and then what to do with the other problem, and then I'm busy, okay, how can I just handle all of these things at the very same time? Well, yeah, all of these difficult situations happen to all of us. Now, this is the good news. You're not alone. We all have those moments and those problems. And again, there is another good news that they're temporary. No matter how long they go, they're not going to stay forever, because we have it in the Holy Book of Quran that inna ma'al usri yusra, with all the difficulties, there's a time for peace and easiness. So do not lose your hope, actually. But what am I supposed to do in these very hard situations? Let's go for a break, and then after that, we're going to talk about that more and more. Yes, this is For a Better Life. I'm Asma, and we're talking about the moment, the time when faith gets into conflict, and then there are these storms of problems that cannot be tolerated. You feel like, oh my God, all the hope that I had in this world are just gone in a blink of an eye. I no longer feel so hopeful. And, well, life is so dark and gloomy, and I see no hope. Yeah, this is the gist of what we say usually in those hard moments. The thing is, of course, with patience. The thing that we lack in these situations is patience. I agree. Yes, I'm one of you guys, and I'm talking of my personal experience as well. So in these situations, when they go longer than a month or 2 months or 3 months, I feel like, okay, I'm done. And there's no way to get out of these situations. And there's no more of hope. And all the positive things and all the positive thinking that I had in my mind, the laws of attraction, everything just comes to be as just, you know, meaningless sort of stuff that people say. And you feel like, okay, everything is over, I'm done. But the truth is, you're not finished. This is the way of life. Sometimes we are so weak
in a way, we are so crushed in a way that we cannot see the strength that we have started to build in ourselves and our character. I know that difficult situations are no way to be called as a blessing, but sometimes, trust me, they come out to be as a blessing. How? Why they come all together? Why everything has been piling up all together and I am just losing the track of everything? As if the life has been this thread that has got so knotted in a way that I do not know from where to start solving the problems and issues. For these situations, trust me, you can find the blessing inside of them after a long period of time. After you grew older, you would look at your life in retrospect and then say, in that very specific period of my life, I was so in a haste that I did not grasp the entire meaning of my life. So if this problem did not happen as a pause or as a break for me to sit and think and have a double thought about what I'm doing, I would have never been the same person that I am today. So it is going to improve my character. All of these difficulties that come in the middle of your life, first of all, they are a sort of a testing, because when you just claim that I'm a Muslim, I am a believer, then you are going to be put into a test to see if you're such a dreamboat or not. As Muslim people, as believers, we are always prone to new obstacles and problems because we're going to be tested, we're going to improve, we're going to know ourselves more and more.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
You know, the important thing is just to keep your pieces together and not to get out of your skin and not lose control over yourself. Be patient and always say to yourself, there comes a day that everything is going to be solved. Have trust in Allah at the very first step and then have hope. I know it's sometimes very difficult. I'm a sort of a person, I myself personally am not such a positive person. But I try to work on myself to look at the bright side as well. Do not look just at the empty parts of the class. Look at the brighter side of everything that happens to you. Maybe it would just make you tolerate the situation easier. I'm not saying that it's going to solve the issue. I'm not going to say that it's going to solve the issue. No, I'm just saying that it's going to make you tolerate the situation pretty much easier. And that's about life. That's all about life, to improve yourself in hard situations, to face them, to be honest with yourself, and then to work on your patience, to have hope in Allah. And of course, we have too much of quotes about hope. But the poem that I always remember every time I talk about hope is that poem called, I guess, Dream or Hope by Langston Hughes, that says, a stick of so tied to your hopes, because life without hope is a broken winged dove. So I guess it's something like this. I usually apply the meanings differently. So yes, a stick so tied to hope, because without it, life is a broken winged bird. Try to just look at the bright side. I know it's difficult and I know that I sound like a preacher right now, but that's the thing that I say to myself in the mirror as well. So it's not a thing that I did not practice myself. If you practice, you can achieve some sort of hope and positive thinking. Yeah. Like always, we're running out of time. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Lebanon's Hezbollah leader says resistance will continue until the demise of the Israeli regime.